to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. A score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get things going on this Monday, March 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day as another week begins on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com from our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Vicks.
Hey, Patty, how are we doing?
I am well. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
It's
Patio Steinberg. We're ready to rock with the next hour and a bit of Flames talk here, including our weekly check-in on the Calgary Wranglers. And here's what is happening again, Vicks. Another week begins. Another crucial road trip begins for the Flames. So after a 2-2-2 road trip through the East and one in Dallas, the Flames came home to a 1-1-1 homestand. They have been a perfectly 500 team since the calendar year of 2025. I believe they're 12-12-4 in the calendar year of 2025. And now they get set for four games in 6 days. Toronto, then New York, then New Jersey, and then off to Long Island for the final game of this four-game road trip on Saturday afternoon. So that's how we're going to kick things off, and that's how we're going to dive in on our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. So it's Steinberg, it's Vickers, and we're kicking off this hour by also saying hello to Derek Wills to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. So, gentlemen, as I said, Toronto Monday, New York Rangers Tuesday, then it's the New Jersey Devils on Thursday, and then a quick turnaround for Saturday afternoon to wrap up the road trip against the New York Islanders. Knowing that, what's our feel, and knowing how wrong we were on the last road trip, every single one of us, what's our feel on how the Flames will, but more importantly, guys, what's our feel on how the Flames should split their goaltending duo over these next four games on the road?
Is there such thing as being less wrong?
Yeah, you could probably
I was less wrong, but still wrong.
I think Vix and I said 5-1, so we were quite wrong.
So yes, we were all wrong.
Less wrong.
I did not see 3-3 coming. That's for sure. I don't know, guys. I don't feel like I'm in a great spot to predict this one. Maybe it's because we were all wrong the last time, but I really think that it could depend on how these first two games go. So I think it's safe to say we know Dustin Wolf's going to start tonight. He was in the starter's net at Scotiabank Arena for the morning skate today. And I think it's safe to assume that for the, what is it, ninth time in 10 back-to-backs, or is it the eighth and ninth? I can't remember.
I'm ninth and 10.
This
ninth
deep into
ten.
The season. Yeah, ninth and 10th. Dan Vladar will start the second half of a back-to-back when the Flames are at Madison Square Garden to take on the Rangers tomorrow. So there goes the first two games of the trip, 1-1. But beyond that, I think it might depend on how the guys play. If Dustin Wolf is really strong and helps the Flames pick up a point or two tonight, I could see him getting three of the four games. You know, if Dan Vladar plays really well in the second half of a back-to-back against a desperate Rangers squad tomorrow night, I could certainly see him getting two of the four. I couldn't see him getting three of the four. But you never know. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that it's 3 for Wolf, 1 for Vladar, or 2-2. I just don't see it going the other way.
Again, I'm with you guys in the sense that I completely blew that 3-3 road trip split that essentially kicked off March. Vladar got Washington, Florida, Dallas. Wolf got Tampa, Carolina, Philadelphia. I'm not going to be gun-shy, though. I'm not going to let it scare me. I'm not going to, you know, let it stop me from trying to figure out this goalie thing again. But I am going to only do half the assignment because I agree with you, Wilsey. Wolf starts against the Toronto Maple Leafs, Vladar against the Rangers. After that, I don't know who would start Thursday against New Jersey, and I do believe, like you, Wilsey, it should probably be reevaluated after the first two games of this road trip. And you can certainly see a scenario where one guy gets three, the other guy gets one. But now, after coming off of that last road trip, I could see it being 3-1 for either goaltender right now, because I really do think that whoever plays better, I could see Vladar, if Vladar outplays Wolf, if Vladar outplays Wolf and gets that Jersey game, and then play strong against New Jersey, why wouldn't you roll him out again? Because who cares who's in net if you're the Calgary Flames right now, provided that that goaltender is winning. That's the absolute only thing that matters at this point in the season. And if Vladar happens to outplay Wolf in the first two games of this road trip, and he gets that third game against the New Jersey Devils, it's on him. But if he has another good outing, I'd go right back at him with the New York Islanders. So I'm going 3-1, but I'm not declaring a goalie.
Okay, that's...
wrong last time. I might as well pick the most obscure thing and then bank on being right.
Honestly, guys, like I think if I were in the shoes of Ryan Huska and Jason LaBarbera and this coaching staff, if I were evaluating these next four games, I would plan on 2-2, and I would hope that everything goes according to plan so you can make it like that. And not to say that you don't want to be able to, it's all flexible. And obviously if Wolf is spectacular or whatever the case may be, like, I think that it's very safe to say that it'll be Wolf and then Vladar on the Monday, Tuesday, but then Thursday and Saturday, if Wolf goes back in Thursday against the Devils, which honestly I'm doing almost regardless, I think, and then he's spectacular against New Jersey, well then, yeah, I'm absolutely evaluating whether or not I want to see him go against the Islanders on Saturday. But I think, If you are comfortable with both guys on this trip, and in that sense, if you're comfortable with the way Vladar, I think we know how comfortable the Flames are with one guy. So if Dan Vladar gives you a quality start against the Rangers on Tuesday, then I think they're prepared to go right back to him against the Islanders on Saturday afternoon. And I think that we have gotten a pretty decent book that Dustin Wolf plays better when he's more rested and not stretched out. So if you're especially on the road, like we just saw him start all three games on the homestand, and I think they're going to continue to be more heavy on Wolf on home ice. But I think in a stretch where you've got four games in 6 days, even though there's not a ton of travel, it's still a lot of hockey in a very short period of time, and you don't even get the full 48 hours between Thursday and Saturday. So if I'm the Flames, I'm planning on going 2-2, or I'm hoping that 2-2 is how it plays out. And then if you have to adjust, well, then you're flexible enough to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vickers is right off his rocker thinking Dan Vladar could get the last three starts of this road trip.
I thought it was 5-1 the last time. So why not go the exact opposite?
Yeah.
Route?
Yeah. And I mean, you didn't really predict that, but you didn't say that wouldn't happen. Comfortable saying that that won't happen unless Dustin Wolf gets hurt. I do not see him getting the start versus the Maple Leafs and then Vladar getting the starts versus the Rangers, Devils, and Islanders. I don't see that happening. If I was a betting man, I would say 2-2. And if Saturday's game wasn't an afternoon game, then I might lean 3 for Wolf, 1 for Vladar. But Pat, to your point, I think it's important to make sure that Dustin Wolf doesn't get worn out down the stretch here. He's going to play more than Dan Vladar if he's healthy. We know that, but I also think it's important to remember he's a 23-year-old playing in his first season as a full-time NHLer, and you're going to need him. And I think if you can give him a little bit more rest because you're confident that Dan Vladar is going to give you a chance to win, then I think that's best for everybody involved. And hey, Vladar's played some really good hockey, so I think the Flames are comfortable giving him a start. Now, assuming he gets the start versus the Rangers, if he plays really poorly in that game, then I think it's definitely going to be 3-1 for Wolf. But if he plays well, then I would lean 2-2.
Yeah, so for me, I did hedge, Wilsey. You called me out on it. I'll own it. I did say 3-1. I didn't fully throw my full support behind Vladar getting three. But to me, it's going to be hinging on two things. One, how Wolf plays against Toronto. And then two, if Vladar can string two consecutive starts together against New York and New Jersey. But I see the scenario most likely happening. Wolf comes out, stops 29 of 31 against the Leafs. Vladar comes in against the Rangers. And then I can
I can
absolutely see the scenario where it's Wolf against the Devils, Wolf against the Islanders. You have 2 days off before hosting the Seattle Kraken next Tuesday. At the same time, that Seattle Kraken game, you could give to Wolf, and that would be 4 days off, or give to Vladar, pardon me, and that would be 4 days off for Wolf, so you can sort of recuperate, re-energize, because I do think that this is going to be a very critical road trip for the Flames.
Mm-hmm. So if Wolf stops 29 of 31 tonight, do the Flames win?
Yes.
You're throwing the predictions out there, Vickers. I love it. I'm going to keep holding your feet to the fire.
Yeah, I do. Nazem Kadri hat trick in Toronto. There you go. How bold do you want to be today?
Oof. Oh, wow. You know what? He had some juice the morning skate today, boys.
You know what's
never
great?
Know.
You know what's great?
Playing his former teams.
What's great about this is if it doesn't happen, nobody cares. And if it does happen, I'm making Pat run it back tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to
run
it.
I would too.
I'm going to run it back tomorrow if it doesn't happen now, just for that. Yes. 29 of 31 gives him a chance. There's no doubt about that. Although, you know, Flames, we know the Flames have had their issues scoring, but yes, 29 of 31 definitely would give him a chance on Monday night against Toronto. 4 games, 6 days, and a new 4-game road trip starts Monday in Toronto. It's Derek, Aaron, Pat, Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. So what does a successful road trip look like for the Flames this time around?
Well, this trip looks a lot different than the last trip, where you played 4 of the last 7 Stanley Cup champions and you played 5 perennial Stanley Cup contenders. And even the quote-unquote easy spot on the bingo card, that game in Philadelphia, I mean, the Flames won it going away 6-3, but, you know, the Flyers at that time, at least, we're still very much in the fight for a playoff spot. So that wasn't a gimme game either. This game tonight, I think, is going to be tough. Craig Berube talked this morning about, you know, his team having to play with more desperation. So we'll see how they respond to that. But he does not seem like a happy head coach right now. So we'll see what kind of game the Flames get from the Maple Leafs tonight. We know the Flames are going to have to play with more desperation from start to finish. They've been good for chunks of games, but not for close enough to a full 60 minutes in some games lately. So we'll see how this one goes. I think this is the toughest game on the schedule, but the last three aren't easy. You know, so you've got a Rangers team that should be playing some pretty desperate hockey right now. But, you know, with that said, you look at some results from around the league, including the Canucks, you know, not playing well again last night, and you never know what you're going to get. But you're playing against a Rangers team that is holding on to the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, just 1 point ahead of the Canadiens. So that's going to be a tough game for the Flames. And then you head to New Jersey to take on a Devils team that has been decimated by injury, especially on defense. But, hey, they're still third in the Metropolitan Division. They might be the least desperate team the Flames play on this trip because they do have a little bit of a cushion. And then you wrap up the road trip with a matinee game against an Islanders team that is trying to hang around in the playoff race. I don't think it's going to happen, guys. I don't think they're very good. And I think it might be time to make some major changes there, but they're 4 points out of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. So what Daryl Sutter used to say was come home with more points than the number of games played, right? So that would be 5 points. For me, that has to be the bare minimum for the Flames on this road trip. They're in a good spot. I know they're on the outside looking in right now. 2 points out of that final playoff spot in the Western Conference, but they've got multiple games in hand, 2 or 3 games in hand on the other teams that they're fighting with. So Flames are still in a good spot. So for me, you've got to come back to Calgary with 5 of a possible 8 points. Anything over and above that would be a bonus.
For me, it's going to be 6-8, whether that's 3-1-0, whether that's 2-0-2, simply because of the picture you painted, Wilsey, in the Western Conference wildcard chase, because somebody between Vancouver, St. Louis, Calgary, and Utah have to play better than 500 hockey the rest of the way in order to grab this thing. So setting the bar above that is where I would go. And again, evaluating the competition, I say this, and I'm going to preface it with Calgary only has 4 wins in their past 10 games. The Leafs only have 5. The Rangers have 4. The Devils have 5. The Islanders have 5. So it's not as if they're playing teams that are streaking up the standings or anything like that. The teams that they'll be facing on this road trip are floating around that 500 mark over the past 10 games, just like the Flames. Flames do have points in 7 of the past 10. If you want to paint a little bit shinier picture for how Calgary's been playing of late. But for me, with how tight things are going to get, they're only going to get tighter as we get closer to game 82. For me, the mark is 6 of a possible 8.
Well, I like what Ryan Lomberg said after practice on Saturday at Winsport. He basically said, yeah, I mean, four of the four games is the goal, and we can't be thinking about anything other than that. And at this point, basically what he said, and this is kind of the message that you're getting now, is like, okay, there's 17 games to go. We're not in a playoff spot. And yes, we've got games in hand, but 500 is not going to be good enough the rest of the way. And we can't just be banking on segment after segment after segment only being 500. So they went 2-2-2 on a road trip, then 1-1-1 on home ice on a 3-game homestand. Like, if they go 2-2-2 or 2-1, or I guess it would be 1-1-2 would be 500 on this road trip. If they continue to just put up 500 numbers, I don't think they're going to get in. And so I think there's a realization that they're going to need to be winning more than they lose down the stretch. And as we were talking about just before you came on, Willsie, the Flames are essentially a perfect 500 since the calendar flipped. January, February, March, they are 12-12-4. So they've been a 500 team for more than 2 months now. And at some point, if they're going to get in, like, they're still relying on the cushion that they built for themselves in the first month, month and a half of the season. So now they need to start putting up more wins than losses if they're going to want to solidify themselves in a playoff spot. And yes, we all know this is probably going to come down right to the final week of the season, maybe into the final couple games of the season. But I think that the understanding inside the room that, hey, 500 is not good enough the rest of the way is an important understanding, and I think vocalizing that is big. So, yeah, I think you got to get 5 of a possible 8, if possible, if not more. If you can win 3 of these 4, then it's a really successful road trip. But if they go just 500, I don't think you can put this in the successful road trip category or even spin it that way, kind of the way we did on the last road trip, which, yeah, when you're grading for competition, it was a little easier to say 500 was bordering on success.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they've been spinning their tires, but then again, so have the teams around them. Like, nobody has grabbed this final playoff spot in the Western Conference.
Only team that's rolling right now is St. Louis. The Blues are rolling now, but they were big-time spinning their tires before, which means they have to be rolling if they want to be even in the conversation.
Yeah, it's just right now, nobody has grabbed the spot and walked with it, let alone run with it. And the Flames are in a position to potentially give themselves a little bit of breathing room if they can use the 2 or 3 games they've got in hand on the other teams that they're battling with and pick up points in those games. So we'll see how it goes. But the crazy thing, guys, 500 hockey probably isn't going to cut it between now and the end of the regular season. But if the Flames play 600 hockey, I think that might be good enough.
I mean, to everyone's point here, nobody's ran with anything right now. So even playing at a 600 level, it's going to put you in a
games you got in hand.
With the games you got in hand, it's going to put you in a lot better situation. And fellas, the reason why I'm going 6 of 8, I feel like 5 of 8, you come home, you're not happy, you're not sad, you're just okay. But if you come back with at least 6 of 8, I think you're feeling a lot better because that means you've either won 3 of 4, so you're starting to build towards putting a run together, or you're going 2-0-2, and that means you are 1 goal away each of the 2 overtime or shootout losses from sweeping the entire road trip and feeling good about your game that way.
600 hockey is 20 points the rest of the way, which is 91 points for the Flames, which I think might get you in. Like, it's going to be low this year. That eighth and final playoff spot is going to be low. I think somewhere between 90 and 93 will probably get you in as the eighth and final seed. So if the Flames play 600 hockey, 91 points, that might get them in when it's all said and done. It definitely, you've got the Canucks and Blues at 73 points. You've got the Flames and Utah at 71 points. You've got the Flames with the best points percentage by 0.01 in that group. So by that metric, the Flames would be in the playoffs if they were to start right now. And then all three teams, or three of the four teams, Vancouver, St. Louis, Calgary, all have the same amount of regulation wins, the first tiebreaker, and Calgary loses the second tiebreaker of regulation overtime wins as it stands right now. It is going to be a fascinating fight to the finish, and that's why, for me, I think 6 of 8 would be very successful. I'd feel pretty good about this trip if they were to go 3-1 on it.
Absolutely. And, I mean, on paper, the last two games look like the two most winnable games. Again, you're playing a Devils team that is third in the Metropolitan Division, but they are really banged up.
Yep.
And then you're playing an Islanders team that traded away some key players and wasn't good before they did that. So I feel like you probably have to get 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 4 out of those two games. Tomorrow's going to be a tough one, a tough turnaround with the second half of a back-to-back against what should be a desperate Rangers team, although who knows with them. They've been all over the place this season. One of the most disappointing teams in the league for me, although if they get in, I think they could be dangerous. And tonight's game against the Maple Leafs, I mean, it feels like it should be a scheduled loss in the sense the Maple Leafs came to Calgary and beat the Flames 6-3. But, you know, Ryan Huska reminded us earlier today that the first half of that game was good for the Flames. Then they started taking some penalties in the Maple Leafs power play, and William Nylander and Austin Matthews made them pay the price for that. But there's a Maple Leafs team that's fighting it a little bit right now, and they've got more offensive talent than the Flames. There's no doubt about that, but they've kind of struggled to score. So we'll see if Dustin Wolf can put on a show on national television tonight and up his chances to bring home the Calder Trophy. And hey, if the Flames can pick up a point or two in Toronto tonight, that would be a great way to start this four-game trip.
And one other thing that I would say is, bet on this thing going to extra time, because inevitably it seems like every time the Flames play a road game at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, it is not decided in regulation. The last four times they've played there have all gone to overtime. Three of them decided in overtime. And last year's game at Scotiabank Arena went to a 5-round shootout, eventually won by the Maple Leafs. So bet on overtime if you like trends, because the last four times they've played there, these games have gone to overtime. Thank you, Wilsey. We will do it again all over tomorrow, breaking down this late Leafs game on Tuesday and getting set for the Flames and Rangers. For now, have a great rest of your Monday. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, enjoy the game.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. This hour of Flames Talk is underway, and the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Monday edition of Flames Talk. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this St. Patrick's Day. Flames back on the road after a 4-2 loss Friday against Colorado. And Vicks, on the one hand, I think you like the way Calgary was able to limit Colorado's top players, even if Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, I thought, were pretty disinterested for a lot of that hockey game. But they don't. Neither of those guys record a point, and kind of just did what was necessary. But the Flames were generally outplayed for two-thirds of that hockey game. It was too little too late in the third period, even though they did put up a pretty valiant effort, got within one. In that five-minute span right to begin the third period, Flames were, they scored the one goal. They had two or three other opportunities that just missed or Scott Wedgwood made a stop on. But man, it's hard to come back on teams like Colorado. That's a Stanley Cup weathered team with elite talent. They know how to win hockey games, even when they're not at their best, which I don't think they were, or even close to it on Friday night. They know how to find ways to win games in third periods and know how to close them out, and they did. So I think you come away from that game generally, at least I came away from it generally frustrated with, yes, the way Calgary played, because for 40 minutes, they were not very good. And the Avalanche kind of choked away any offense. What, they were at like three shots midway through the second period?
Four shots through the first 32:50, followed it up with 20 shots in the remaining 27 minutes of the game. To your point, Colorado's panic threshold is through the roof. You're not going to spook them. You're not going to scare them with an onslaught in the third period when they've got a multi-goal lead. But, like, yeah, you got to show more through the first half of the game. And I think one of the defining moments of that game might have been that Dryden Hunt breakaway that Scott Wedgwood blockered away. Because at that point, that was, I believe that was three-ish minutes into the second period. That was their third shot of the game. If that goes in, you're tied 1-1 with having three shots against Colorado in 23
minutes. And maybe the Avalanche are frustrated.
And maybe that's the straw that breaks the camel's back at that point. Again, in a multi-goal lead in the third period, they're not going to be phased if you put together a little bit of a push. But, like, for me, and I'm sure the players were the same way, and in hearing them talk post-game, there weren't really any moral victories to pull out of that one. Not a lot of good things. You don't feel good about anything this time of year when you put together a performance like that, regardless of if your last 27 minutes you registered 20 shots or not. Yes, you did some good things. You did manage to shut down McKinnon. The one thing I'll say about that, though, is I didn't really love the Kadri-McKinnon hard match through the first period or the first 25 minutes of the game, because, to be perfectly honest, Kadri-Huberdeau is your only consistent scorer.
It takes away from the offense.
Like that line had one shot. And now, granted, the whole team only had three shots in the first 23 minutes, but that line only had one shot. I think it was three or four shot attempts. So to nullify McKinnon, you basically axed your biggest scoring threat. And Huska and the Flames went away from that. It wasn't a hard matchup after that. But, yeah, you can take the good and say, yeah, you managed to shut down McKinnon. You did it at the expense of generating nothing. When you did have your push, it wasn't good enough to go against one of the best teams in the league in terms of closing out games. So, silver linings, not sure that those exist this time of year when you're one of four teams trying to chase down the second wild card from the West.
I did like a couple of the line shuffles they put together in the third period, and those lines will be how they start the game Monday in Toronto to kick off this four-game road trip. One of them was moving Martin Pospisil up to play with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau, and I thought that almost immediately that gave the line a little bit more bite and a little bit more kick, and they were a whole lot more impactful. And honestly, one of the more important stories for me since the Flames have come back from the Four Nations break is the play of Pospisil, because he has looked a whole lot more like the guy he was last season. The menace, the guy who was a difference maker, the guy who was getting under the skin of the opposition on a regular basis. That's what Martin Pospisil has looked like since the break. This was head coach Ryan Huska when I asked him about that Saturday at practice.
No matter where we put him over the last little while, he's been good. He's using his speed. I think he's been physical, but he's also holding pucks more, and he's generating some more opportunities and chances. So, you know, when you look at Marty, you know, I remember way back when Sam Bennett was a younger player that was a little bit reckless like Marty was at times. Sam's really turned himself into a very good player. And that's something that we look at Marty, that it's a possibility that he can do that because he skates so well. He's got zero fear in his game. And he has a skill set that will allow him to do things like that.
And so I thought Pospisil looked great on the Kadri line. And if they can get this guy going the rest of the way, or if they can keep this guy going the way he is the rest of the way, that's great news when it comes to their hopes of making the playoffs. And if they make it and they're getting this Martin Pospisil in the postseason, that's a difference maker type of thing. Like that's he's the type of guy that could be an X factor, should be an X factor in a playoff series. So, you know, they got to get there first, but I definitely like what I'm seeing from Pospisil of late.
Absolutely. And it goes well beyond points, because if you just scout the stat sheet on Martin Pospisil over the last seven games, he's got 1 point and assist, and you go, okay, well, that's not very significant. But the fact that he's more aggressive, more physical, playing with way more pace, his hits per 60 are up almost six hits a game compared to his regular pace, which is no slouch to start with. He averaged on the season just shy of 16 hits per 60 this year, 21 over 21 in his past seven games in that same metric. So when you're playing with pace and you're playing physical, It leads to more opportunity in the offensive zone, which we just heard Huska talk about. It leads to more turnovers from the other side because you're pressuring the defense, you're getting in on the forecheck, you're disrupting all that sort of stuff. And again, not to parrot everything Huska said, but we've seen him on the fourth line and thrive. We've seen him on the third line and thrive. We've seen him on the first line, and he's going to get another opportunity there yet again. So for me, it's less about the points, and you can still be an X factor without the points. It's all about being that physical disruptor and playing with pace. And we've seen that inconsistently this season, but I'll agree, we've seen it a lot more coming out of that Four Nations break than we did prior.
And is a very, very promising trend. I also like Coleman and Coronado back together on a line. They had Frost in the middle for the third period. Farabee moved in there once in a while, too. They're going to start in Toronto with Farabee on another line with Hunt and Sharon Govich, but they're going to put Coleman, Coronado on the flanks of Frost in the middle, and I like that because I do think Coronado and Coleman play well off of one another, and it worked when Michael Backlund was their center. Obviously, Michael's not able to play right now with the upper body injury, and it worked. It worked in the third period of Friday's game against Colorado. So I like that, you know, you've got a pretty clear top two lines, and no, it you don't have three lines that you're super comfortable with right now, but in Frost, Coronado, and Coleman, and Kadri, Huberdeau, and Pospisil, I think you've got a top six forward group that you're confident in getting a lot of minutes out of.
Well, and I'm curious to see this Frost, Coronado, Coleman in more of an expanded look as well, not just in a third period where you're chasing a lead, because Frost is not going to be Michael Backlund on this line, and that's not the role that he'll be asked to play. You're not looking for this to necessarily be that de facto shutdown line. But what you have in Frost is a really strong playmaker. You've got your shooter in Coronado. We know Coronado and Coleman have past chemistry together when Backlund was there, but you have Coleman as sort of the elder statesman of that line that can do a lot of that heavy lifting in terms of that two-way game a little bit, maybe free up Frost, Coronado to play a little bit more freely offensively. It'll be one of those combinations that I look at against the Toronto Maple Leafs Monday night and go, is this something that could be a little longer term with Backlund out, or is it something that caught lightning in a bottle when you were chasing a game but didn't manage to continue that chemistry forward? It'll be one of the intriguing trios, I'll say, when looking at this Calgary Flames lineup against Toronto.
Definitely felt like they missed Backlund. Like, there's no doubt about it.
There's not another Michael Backlund on this team.
Because to your point earlier, And we'll see how Frost does in head-to-head matchups, and he may have no choice because
no benefit of last change.
Craig Berube's got that decision on faceoffs on Monday night. But without Backlund, like, Backlund's always taking one of the top two lines, usually the top line on home ice, and one of the top two lines, depending on how the other team wants to do it, on the road. And now, for the first two periods, as you mentioned, Kadri's line was pretty much a head-to-head match against MacKinnon. And that, because you've got MacKinnon and his line and the talent that exists on that trio, it takes away from how you're able to generate offensively. And I thought after the first 5 minutes of the first period, Kadri, Huberdeau were pretty inconspicuous when it comes to their offensive outputs, which you understand. So if the Frost line is able to take some tough matchups and do a decent job head-to-head on Monday, whether it's the Matthews line or the Tavares line, if they're able to do that against a very deep Maple Leafs forward group, then it really allows the Kadri group maybe a little more opportunity to go in and generate offensively.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not asking Frost, just because he's playing between Coronado and Coleman, to completely switch your game around and try to be Michael Backlund. This is Captain Obvious, and I've said it before, but like, there is not another Michael Backlund on this roster. There isn't a guy you can just throw down the middle and give him 100% of the other team's number one matchup and expect them to, I won't even necessarily say thrive, but even potentially survive. So it's going to be on this, however Toronto and Berube, as you mentioned, want to play it, but it'll be on this Coleman, Frost, Coronado trio, not necessarily to shadow a Matthews or shadow a Tavares. Matthews got Marner on his wing. Tavares has Nylander on his wing. But when you're on the ice, and if you happen to be up against one of those lines, you're not necessarily a checking line there. Still be an offensively minded line. And then just play on the other side of center ice as much as possible, good. Best defense is a good offense for that.
Easier said than done.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here going from the press box being like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I understand the game's a little bit differently from the seats that we sit on versus the bench or being out on the ice.
And I mean, there's two pretty good lines in New York on Tuesday night. You got the Trocheck line with Panarin. JT Miller's playing center with Lafreniere and Zibanejad. Kreider's currently on their third line. So, you know, there's definitely some, and there's a bunch of players that you've never heard of in their bottom six.
I guess what I'm just saying is don't change your game if you're Frost just because you're playing against Matthews or you're playing against Tavares, because if you suddenly try to become a defensive shutdown center, you're getting away from the things that have made you successful this far.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I just also don't. If you have to be a little bit more conservative going up against those guys,
that's what you got Blake Coleman for.
I've got no problem with that. If that means that it takes away a little bit from Frost's offense, but it means that you're doing the job defensively, I think that you'll, I think that's a good step.
Put it this way. I'd rather see the Coleman Frost Coronado line saw off against the Matthews line, because it just means that Kadri Huberto doesn't have that responsibility like we saw against
have the Tavares line instead.
But that's a little bit easier assignment. Don't get me wrong. I still am a big William Nylander fan, but I would rather have my top line, if I'm the Flames, go up against the Tavares line than the Matthews line.
Pretty good group of forwards.
I mean, it's not bad. We didn't even mention Matthew Nyes, Bobby McCann, man. That guy's a player. Yeah. Or McMahon, sorry. I always call him McCann. McMahon is a player.
Yeah. Pretty good team they got over there. Would you, like, four-horse race? Is it turned into that for you?
Oh, yeah.
So
it always kind of was. Well, I shouldn't say always, because I kept tossing out, it's Vancouver, Calgary.
It really wasn't until recently. I didn't see this Blues run coming.
Especially with Parayko out.
They lose Parayko and they're still winning more than they're losing. They've been scoring a ton.
They've won 7-10.
I know. Is that not winning more than they're losing?
I mean, hey, semantics over there.
Well, you're the one who corrected me.
7 out of 10 is a heater.
There. I did not see this Blues run coming. Utah's just been hanging around all year, so I'm not surprised that they have stayed in it. And obviously Vancouver and Calgary are playing 500 hockey, and that's what they've done in the calendar year. So over at Money Puck, latest playoff odds look like this. St. Louis, 36.5%. So Money Puck has them with the best chance of making the playoffs, followed by Vancouver at 29.4%, Utah at 25.1%, and Calgary at 25%. So there is an 11.5% spread between St. Louis, who they have as the best odds of the four, and Calgary, who they have with the worst odds of the four. And that basically tells you that this could go any which way of the four teams. And with no disrespect intended, it's one spot for four teams. I don't think you're chasing down Minnesota. I don't think you're chasing down Los Angeles. You don't think
Los Angeles is chasing down Edmonton,
right? Like that. Yeah. Oilers and Kings are again on a collision course. Vegas is scuffling along here, and maybe one of Edmonton and LA can track down the Vegas Golden Knights. And I mean, LA's got games in hand on everybody because of the wildfire situation.
Yep.
So the Kings could very well find themselves fighting for top spot in the division as well. Point is, I don't think Vancouver, Utah, St. Louis, or Calgary is chasing down anything other than the eighth and final playoff spot or the second and final wild card spot, which means you're getting ready for a series with Winnipeg, and you've got to be the better of a group of four, the best of a group of four between now and the end of the season. The team with the most ground left is Calgary, which could be an advantage or could be a disadvantage based on how you want to look at it. Same with St. Louis. They've got the least amount of runway left, which could be a disadvantage because there's fewer points on the table, could be an advantage because there's more rest on the table. Depends how you want to look at it. But that's kind of the way things are shaping up in this playoff race down the stretch.
I mean, you could sort of paint a picture for and against each of those four teams. I agree with you. I don't think anybody's catching third in the Pacific, whoever that happens to be, whether it's LA, whether it's Edmonton. That's out of the realm of possibility. Do I see anybody catching Minnesota for that first wild card? I know they've only got 3 wins in their past 10 games, but it would take a pretty significant collapse, I think, from the Wild contingent to not claim a wild card spot at all. if you're talking 1-4. There's, I just don't see a path for two of these four teams we're talking about to make it. So yeah, it's not a surprise when you've got a, what is it, an 11-point spread between 1-4 calculated by MoneyPuck in terms of odds of making the playoffs. I don't mind.
Do you agree with that?
I mean,
with that 1-4. Now they
I like that order.
They base it on strength of schedule. Yeah. They base it on underlying metrics. They base it on injuries, all that type of stuff. That it's over at the Dom's at the Athletic hasn't updated in a while, so I think they're about 4 or 5 days behind as of right now. But they put a lot into their algorithm to come up with their playoff odds. But you don't love the order, eh?
No, and this is kind of how I'll break it. And I'm not going to profess to be an expert on what St. Louis has over the course of their remaining 14 games this season or whatever it happens to be. Same with Utah, same with Vancouver. But if I'm breaking this down, and if it was a 68-game season, Seattle's done. Calgary would have 3 games remaining. Vancouver and Utah each have 1. Like, I don't hate the situation the Flames are in because they are still 100% controlling their own destiny as it stands right now. Because as you mentioned, they've got, of the four, they've got the highest points percentage. And now not everything comes down to points percentage.
By 0.01.
By 0.0. Hey, inch or a mile. Ask any racer, any real racer, wins a win. They just are in a position where they can still control everything without having to rely on external help. And that, to me, if I were a member of the Calgary Flames, would be a comforting thing to know that I still have 100% control over my destiny.
The most the Canucks can get to now, they've got 30 points left on the table, is 103 points. That's their max, which means Calgary's magic number is down to 16.5. 16.5 games or 33 points is Calgary's magic number. And right now, with the tiebreakers all, in fact, right now, Calgary's in the backseat when it comes to the tiebreakers. First tiebreaker, if you're tied, is regulation wins. Second one is regulation overtime wins. So Calgary, Vancouver, and St. Louis all have 24 regulation wins. And Vancouver, St. Louis have 29 regulation overtime wins, Calgary with 27. So by that metric, Calgary a little bit in the backseat as well, which just goes to show in my eyes, you're going to have to be a point ahead. I don't know if you want to be putting yourself in a spot where you're tied on the final day of the season.
That said, they do have 2 games at hand on Vancouver and 3 on St. Louis. Yes, you cash in 1 win and suddenly you leapfrog to the top of all those tiebreakers.
For sure. And I mean, look, I mean, there, you can make the argument that any one of those 4 teams is in the driver's seat. Calgary with the fewest games remaining, that gives them a leg up in some ways. And Vancouver being the team in the playoff spot, that gives it, it's going to be a really interesting fight to the finish. I know this. Flames are going to have to, they were 500. They were just above 500 in January, just below 500 in February. They're kind of like right at 500 in March. You're going to have to be above 500 if you're going to want to be in the playoffs in the final 17 games. I don't think you need to be vastly ahead of 500, but if you can get yourself to 90 or 91 points, I think you're in the playoffs this year.
I still think one of them is going to have to go on a run. And when I say that, I mean not like, oh, I have to, but like one team is going to catch fire.
Well, St. Louis already has, and they're not in a playoff spot.
Yeah, they're playing catch up still. I'm talking from here on out. I'm not concerned about what happened last week or the week before.
So now St. Louis has to keep this going, is what you're saying. So they're playing at a...
700.
And they're playing about 750? Just over 700 points percentage clip. And now they got to keep that going-ish between now and the end of the season. Anyway,
without their number one defenseman.
It's Steinberg and Vickers. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we are coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. And on Mondays, we take a closer look at the number one affiliate of the Calgary Flames. That would be the Calgary Wranglers. Wranglers, close weekend in Abbotsford. They fell 5-4 to the Canucks on Saturday, and then Sunday in Abbotsford, a 1-0 loss to the Canucks. So the Wranglers now sit 31-22-7. They are tied for fourth in the AHL's Pacific Division. It's time to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and say hello to the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Joe Cirella joins us right now. Joe, it's Pat and Aaron. Always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for doing this. I guess just how would you evaluate this weekend? What'd you see from your group in a couple of tight losses in Abbotsford?
Yeah, you know, we lost in a shootout on the first night and, you know, the 1-0 loss the next night. You know, with and you never want to talk about, you know, changes and injuries and different things like that, the call-ups, because it's throughout the league. And, you know, this weekend we just found that, you know, we had a couple injuries on the weekend. You know, we added a player that couldn't, you know, he only played the one game at the deadline there. But I thought we competed and, you know, it wasn't the outcome that we wanted in both contests. Again, you're battling with the, you know, with Abbotsford for you know, positioning. You know, I thought it was, you know, we were close, but again, it you know, we're not playing horseshoes or hand grenades, right? You know, we're in the business of winning these hockey games, so we can't be satisfied just being close. We got to find ways to, you know, get those, you know, the points or the extra points when we have the opportunity. Yes, it was, you know, better, and we didn't, you know, we didn't give up, and which was good for us, you know. It went right down to it, but we need to focus in on all aspects of our game. Like our specialty teams have to be better. You know, our D zone was good, you know, for the most part. You know, our shootout, you know, we haven't won in a shootout in the last four times that we went to a shootout where, you know, earlier in the year we did. So it's all aspects of the game that we have to continue to work on and get better at and not be satisfied just being close. We have to close these things out, and, you know, and if it's competing and, you know, finding that extra little gear, that's what we have to do as a group.
Joe, you talk about that, you know, the two really close games. What did it tell you though on Saturday night, the shootout loss, where you have the lead after 40 and Abbotsford scores the two quick ones to take their lead back. And they now have this one goal lead late, but you find a way. Tyson Berry scores in the final 10 seconds. You get that extra, like, what did that tell you, even though you don't get it done in the shootout, what did that tell you about the group and how this group is going to compete right till the end?
Well, and that's what I liked about it. You know, that whole game, we started off, you know, we had the lead, or we scored early, they came back, then we scored back, you know, we came back again in the first period to make it 3-2. Second period, I thought we got away from our game, in both games, actually. But, you know, going into the third, you know, yeah, they capitalized on a couple situations. But then we really pushed, and, you know, yes, it took us to pull the goalie and, you know, get it done with the 6 seconds. I thought we were, you know, in good shape. And then, we had a chance at the end of overtime where they took another penalty, and we had some great opportunities to score, but we just didn't get it done. And then, you know, like I said, getting into the shootout, it was, you know, where we had success early, we're just not finding it. But, you know, again, I like the resilience that we battled back and we had some swagger. You know, the next night again, you know, dominated the first period. I thought we outshot them 2-1 in the first. And then, you know, I think we sort of got away from the game again, and that sort of turned the momentum around. And then in the third period, you know, you feel like you just run out of time that, you know, we had some good opportunities. We had some good chances. You know, we pulled the goalie again and, you know, you were hoping that you could strike lightning twice, but, you know, we had two or three real good chances, but we just didn't get it done. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, you lose the game in regulation. And, you know, those points are very important at this time of the year. But again, you know, we just got to find a way to, you know, we can't take a period off. You can't take a shift off. And that's the mindset that this group has to get to, because, you know, going down the stretch here, there's going to be guys in and out of the lineup, right, with how the Flames are going and, you know, what, you know, we're going through with a couple injuries on the weekend. So, you know, again, we talk about giving other guys opportunities and, you know, you got to see what they can do to, to put themselves in a good position to succeed. So,
Joe, you take a look at where things sit in the Pacific Division standings and how your group is fighting tooth and nail. Colorado maybe has a stranglehold on first spot, but from where you are, tied for fourth to second place, it is a 3-point spread. So it really is anybody's game for home ice and playoff seeding, so on and so forth. You've got 12 games to go, and you've got a lot of young players on this roster. Being in a playoff fight like this and at fighting tooth and nail like you are down the stretch, how important is a stretch like this for the development to some of your younger players?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity, right? Like, you know, management can take, you know, we can take a look as coaches how they react to these tight positions, right? And a little bit of adversity, see how they react to that. And obviously management could look at the same thing, right? And, you know, we're given, you know, our defense corps, you got a lot of young guys that are, you know, you could see what they're made of down the stretch here, and they're getting valuable, tough games that you have to be in, playoff style games. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to develop and progress. And, you know, as a coaching staff, that's what we're trying to get to, where, you know, we can compete, you know, with the best of the teams. And down the road, it's going to be, you know, we play Coachella. We play Ontario. We're going to have to play Abbotsford, right? We play the Barracuda, who are right on our tail, and, you know, Tucson, who's in a playoff spot. So it's going to be, you know, right down to the wire, where, you know, we're playing the teams that we potentially can play in the playoffs. And, you know, it'll give us a good test to see where we are. And, you know, going forward, it helps us in the long run, I think.
We're chatting with Joe Cirella, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, as they get set for a weekend set this coming weekend, Friday and Sunday, against Coachella Valley. Joe joining us here on Flames Talk on this Monday. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. Vicks?
Joe, maybe a philosophical one for you, but in the American League, there's always that development aspect versus the goal of winning. From your perspective, how do you balance trying to put guys in positions to earn promotions versus doing, though, seeing them graduate to the NHL, but then you lose them off your roster while you're still trying to remain competitive?
Well, that's part of the gig of the American League, right? And you put yourself in a position, or the players in positions, that they can, you know, succeed, but also, you know, a lot of them are playing extra minutes. A lot of them are getting, you know, power play opportunity time. You know, we're auditioning for penalty killing, because, you know, again, the guys that are getting called up either are on the power play or penalty killing. You know, we have some injuries now, and, you know, some of the PK guys are out. So now you're auditioning other guys to it. And sometimes you can find, you know, it's part of development. You can, you know, down the road, they could say, yeah, I killed for a bit, and, you know, in the American League, if they get that opportunity, because, you know, the NHL team's always looking for guys that can step in. And, you know, if they're getting called up and they're going to be in the bottom nine role, that, you know, if they could add that penalty kill into their repertoire, I think it's, you know, it's a bonus for them. So, So right now, everyone's getting an opportunity for the most part to, you know, either penalty kill or be on the power play and play 5-on-5 minutes. If we're defending a lead, they could, 6-on-5, are they responsible defensively? Are they power play guys? If we're pulled a goalie, are they, they're getting opportunities to do this. And right now, everyone's getting an opportunity to do a lot of things that probably they didn't do earlier on in the year. So I think that's part of development. Obviously we're still trying to win games when we can, and we're disappointed when we don't. So, we have to, find ways to use the players that we have that given night on in the roster to, help us succeed and try winning. And sometimes it's different roles than they might have earlier on in the year. So it's, it's a development way both ways. So I think it's positive in that aspect of it.
You mentioned losing some guys to injury and to call-ups. Dryden Hunt would fall in the latter category with his recall to the Flames. Point per game guy for you, 48 points in 48 games, had 5 points in 5 games prior to the call-up. Just from your perspective, what did he do to earn the promotion to join the big group?
Well, I think the familiarity from, the Flames coaching staff, they know what they get. When you call up Dryden, he's a guy that can play. You can fit him in any role, right? Like he can be a top, six forward, in a pinch, and he wouldn't look out of place. And, obviously he could be in the bottom six pairing or bottom six line player where he's responsible and could give you a little bit of offense from that. He plays power play, kills penalties for the Wranglers. So he has that in his repertoire, right? And, as a coach, you always want options. And, I think Dryden gives them a lot of options, whenever he does get called up.
Adam Klapka, another player that was recalled by the Flames last week. Very unique player, I think it's fair to say, with his size and how he can impose it on the opposition. From your perspective, how rare is a player of sort of his physical combination when you consider the skill that he can add to his game as well?
Well, that's just it. With his size, with Adam, I think at the NHL level, it's very specific what they want him to do, right? Like he's got to be a straight line player. He has the ability to score goals. When he does that with his physicality, he's a very effective player. When he comes down into, with the Wranglers, he's a power play net front guy. We've tried him on the PK. I love his reach and his ability, because he can skate. And he holds his offensive skills, at our level. Sometimes you want him just to be more straight line with us. But, he has the capability with that reach and with his skill that he can be a very effective player at both levels, right? Like if he concentrates one way at the NHL level, he's a very effective NHL player. At our level, again, same sort of thing. He's very effective because he adds both aspects to that, to his skill set. And not many players with that size have that. And, it's an asset for the organization to have him in the organization.
Coach, a little bit of a different player, but how important has Sam Morton become over the course of the last couple of weeks? 4 goals, 6 points in his last 5 games. You mentioned looking for scoring. You've lost off your roster Hunt and Klapka to call-ups. Just what have you seen out of Morton recently, and how important is he going forward?
Yeah, he's been our one of our best players offensively. And, again, a young player just coming into his first year in the league. I know he had a little stint right at the end of last year, but consistency, right? Like, he started off a little slow and then started getting hot and slow. And, recently he's been hot. you know, when he does that, find that consistency of playing, you know, a 200-foot game, which he needs to do, and becoming that responsible player, you know, he is an asset for us right now. And right now, with the challenge is trying to find, you know, players that he can play with, and, you know, where we can, you know, get some lightning on some of the lines that we, combinations that we're trying. You know, like I said, you score 5 one night and you can't score the next night. And that's where we need the consistency from our whole group, not just Sam, but our whole group. And, you know, right now we have to find, you know, combinations that's going to, because it's ever changing, right? Like, you know, like I said, you know, with the call-ups, with the injuries and different things, we got to find some consistency here that going forward that, you know, this is how it's going to look. And this is, you know, we got to work through it and find these combinations to, you know, get that consistency of scoring and defending at the same time.
Last one for you, Joe. It's Joe Cirella. He is the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. And you know, you've had a similar setup the last couple of weeks, just in terms of the way the weeks have set up. You've got Coachella Valley at the Dome Friday and Sunday, so a couple home games this weekend. Obviously, we know how important those two games will be in this Pacific Division playoff race. But just, I guess, set us up for the week ahead. You're back on home ice. You've got some time at home. You've got the ability to get some rest and some practices in. What is this week look like heading into a tough Coachella Valley two games this weekend?
Yeah, we're going to get prepared for them. You know, they're a good, you know, good depth hockey club. You know, right now we're battling, you know, 2 points behind them. You know, I know they have a game in hand. They came in last, I guess it was the last couple of weeks they were in here, and, you know, I don't think we played our best. And it showed that. So I think, you know, we know they're a good team. We have to be prepared. I think if, you know, when we start talking about defense first and, you know, create, you know, when we have our opportunities, I think it'll be a good week that we can work on, you know, just a lot of consistency, a lot of, you know, the compete, the battle. You can't play loosey-goosey or fire wagon hockey against a team that can score, you know, just as much as we can. I think we have to pay attention to D-zone. And, you know, if we do that, hopefully we can, you know, get a couple wins and put us right back near the top of the, you know, the Pacific again.
Joe, as always, appreciate the time. We will do it again next week after a couple of games with Coachella Valley. But good luck this weekend. Have a good week of prep ahead. Thanks, as always, for doing this, hey?
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Aaron. You guys have a good week.
You as well. That is Joe Cirella. He is the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery as we start to wrap things up on this Monday, St. Patrick's Day edition of Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AAV. Vickers, Cam Hughes, Taylor Dingman are outstanding producers this hour, and this hour has been the Sports Drive. Thanks for hanging out with us. Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.